Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And it's Monday. Welcome to a new week. March Madness alive and well. The tournament's this week. The tournament begins next. Thanks for being a part of the show. And let's get right to what happened over the weekend. And the big story was, yes, you got it. South Carolina does it again over a surprising team. It took a gallant comeback by Tennessee to set up the final, but it was the same old story yesterday in Greenville as the Lady Gamecocks win the seventh SEC tourney in the past 9 years, but their sights are on bigger fish to fry, like another national championship. They are the defending champions. In college football, buzzwords. What does that mean? We'll talk to Andy Staples a little bit later on. You hear them all the time, culture. That's probably the biggest one. Fit. You understand what it's all about. Saban disciple. We'll talk about that a little bit later with Andy, of course. And what about Anthony Richardson? We kept trying to tell you that he's the most talented player in the combine, but is he going to knock out Bryce Young for number one? That's what some people say. Andy Staples joining us on that subject as well. Don't bet on that happening, though. In the SEC spring preview, it's all starting to happen. Bama, LSU, and the rest contend with Georgia. Chris Lowe from ESPN joining us at the very beginning this afternoon before we get to your phone calls. Chris, many thanks for your time. Good afternoon. Thank you. And the spring has sprung, not officially, but what are you learning as you delve into the SEC spring football practice schedule?
Probably what everybody else is, Paul. Everybody's chasing the dogs. And what Kirby Smart has built there in the last 2 years to win two in a row and have the talent. Now, granted, Stetson Bennett's not coming back for his 10th season, but they've got talent, all over the field. The thing I look for, having covered this league for a long time, when I go to visit and talk to coaches and assistants and people in that program, is when you go watch the defensive line play and the front seven players practice as they split up into position groups. Because remember, in the preseason, in the spring, you just got numbers. Got a lot of new players, a lot of new faces. You don't necessarily have names in the back of the jerseys. And the program is elite when you get down there and you watch these guys practice. Again, I'm talking about defensive front guys and linebackers. And you can't tell the difference in number the ones, the twos, and sometimes even the threes. And I think that's what Kirby has built there in Athens.
Chris, I realize there are a lot of controversies going on and a lot of issues connected to Georgia present players and obviously former players. People have wondered. I've had it asked to me, and I'll ask you because I think I know the answer, but I don't want to assume anything about Kirby Smart and the culture of Georgia football. A couple of months ago, it seemed like maybe it was the best in the country. Has that changed with all this off-the-field headlines, or do you think Kirby Smart still has a pretty good hold of that program?
Well, Paul, my colleague Mark Schlabel had a chance to sit down with Kirby last week, and Mark asked him that very question, if they had a culture problem, and Kirby was very quick to say no. And I think that's a fair question, because when you have some of the awful things that have happened off the field, and I think we all are just so sad that any time a young person loses their life, no matter what the circumstances, that's sort of where your mind and your heart goes to. But those questions are going to be asked. No matter if you won two straight national championships or whether you had two straight seasons where you haven't gone to bowl games. So it's a fair question. I think Kirby absolutely was quick to say no. I think our culture is very, very good here. To me, the question going forward now is, does this become something inside the program that is, I won't say a distraction, but something that as people continue, because people in the news media are going to continue to dig on this and see what else is out there. And they're going to continue to ask these questions. How does Kirby, on down through his coaching staff and his players, react and respond? I think a lot of people will be watching to see what happens there. But Kirby is he's got a really good handle on that program. I don't think anybody that's been around that program has talked to him. There's never any confusion or any question about who's running the show there.
With Chris Lowe, let's get to some of the individual camps. Alabama not open yet, but I don't think it ever really closes there, Chris, as you well know. What are you hearing? Two new coordinators and the search for a new quarterback.
Well, let's start an offense with Tommy Rees. Tommy Rees comes in 30 years old from Notre Dame and is a guy that you look at his track record. He likes to run the football. He wants to use the tight end. He wants to throw the ball over your head. And I think Nick Saban understands, you know, you don't have Bryce Young back there anymore. You don't have that magician. And how many times did he get them out of trouble the last couple of years just making plays seemingly with eyes all in the back of his head and the side of his head? You don't have that anymore. So you're probably going to need to take the pressure off of whoever the quarterback is, now, whether it's Ty Simpson or Jalen Milroe, and run the football. And run it off the goal line, and run it on third and short, and run it to finish games, and still be able to make plays down the field. And that's where I think we don't know yet who that guy is going to be. But Bama didn't have that vertical deep threat last year, and it hurt them all. I think the junior college kid, Malik Benson, has a chance to be that guy. And on defense, Kevin Steele is no stranger to Nick. This is his third time around with Nick Saban. They want to be more aggressive, force more turnovers, force more negative plays on defense than maybe they did the last year or two. And I think that's the priority on defense. Clearly they have talent. You don't have that marquee quarterback, so you're probably going to have to be more team-oriented guys all around the quarterback. And I think that starts on defense to help set up the offense this year.
I'll go to LSU next. Brian Kelly coming off of a surprising first year. Expectations are now, I wouldn't say they're out of control, but they're going to be pretty strong. How is this program equipped to deal with that and make another run toward Atlanta?
Yeah, they're going to be really expectations are going to be out of sight, and with good reason. I mean, if you look at the West, and it's not Alabama, then I think LSU's right there. You got a lot of young talent on defense, Paul. Remember, Mason Smith comes back from an injury. He hardly played at all last year in the defensive line. He is a terrific player, a pro-type player. You got Jaden Daniels back at quarterback. I always look at two things. I look at experienced playmakers at the quarterback position, and I look at line play. Now, LSU was really young in the offensive line last year, and it cost him at times. Those guys are all back. And then you've got Harold Perkins on defense, who's a finisher. So they've got seemingly all the pieces in place. But to your point, how do they handle these expectations? You know, no one really expected Brian Kelly in year one to do what they did and get to the SEC championship game. And I think one of the more fascinating storylines this year on both sides, both the East and the West, is LSU truly here to stay, you know, in the West? And is Tennessee truly here to stay? You know, are those two teams – both of them were better than anybody really dreamed they would be last year. Was that a one-year deal, or can Josh Heupel at Tennessee and Brian Kelly at LSU sort of keep building on what they did last year?
Chris, before you go, a couple of other ones. You're in Tennessee. You live there. What do you hear on the Vols and expectations pretty high as well for Josh Heupel in Josh Heupel's third year?
They lose a lot of key players, Paul, starting with Hendon Hooker. And he's going to be a tough one to replace. But I do think a Heupel's system and his offense, the way they play, you know, sometimes it's easier to bring in other guys. And certainly they lose two really good players at receiver as well. But that system has been really, really successful before at UCF. And we've seen in 2 years what they've done. Joe Milton, I think, gives them a lot more confidence at quarterback. Based on the way he played Paul against Clemson in the Orange Bowl, he looked composed. He didn't try to play outside himself. He used the guys around him. And remember, in that bowl game, he was without a couple of their top weapons who chose not to play. So I think that's probably the best news for Tennessee is he played against a really good defense and played well, and Tennessee beat Clemson pretty soundly in that game.
Chris, many thanks. Great to hear from you, as always, and good luck at the SEC this spring. We'll continue our previews as more camps begin to open, but we're a long way from being done. This is Monday, and, of course, Southern Hoops on, and we'll talk to the national championship-winning coach from Kentucky in 1998. Tubby Smith will join us. Staples on the combine. Tom Green on what happened to Ole Miss down the stretch. Was it Auburn rumors that did them in? And Sam Acho joins the show. And your phone call is right around the corner.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we say hello to callers for the first time this afternoon, and Hugh is up next in Deep Gap.
Hello, Paul.
Hugh?
I am absolutely delighted by the fact that my eulogy for John Calipari's coaching career was just a little bit premature.
Well, first of all, Hugh, by the way, thanks for your note. I saw it the other day. But secondly, it was eloquent. I would love for you to deliver that eulogy for me, premature or not. But, I mean, what's going on now that suddenly Kentucky has a double bye and looks like one of the SEC's best teams in the tournament?
That is a great question that I will endeavor to answer.
Please.
For the first time in 14 years, I saw John Calipari come to a screeching halt and do a 180 turnaround in the way he handles his basketball team. There was a huge shift in coaching philosophy starting with the first Tennessee game. And the bottom line is John Calipari quit micromanaging every possession. Paul, he's got four grad students that play regular or start. He's got three outstanding freshmen and two very strong upperclassmen that are paint substitutes. He doesn't need to be screaming and hollering and jerking people out after every possession. He's turned the game over to the kids and absolutely is having the most fun he's had in 14 years at Kentucky. I don't know how far they can go, but when you see them break out a very competitive 2-3 zone or a 1-2-1-1 diamond press and do what they're doing and ring up the threes, that don't look like any dribble-drive John Calipari offense. I am so proud of him, but let me say this to you. Next year will be his 15th year. If he has a great season this year, he belongs in front of a TV camera doing what Jay Billis and the fellow from Florida that does their Dick Vitale and those guys do. He has a magnetic personality, and as long as you're not coaching against him, everybody loves him. I think he has a brilliant career in front of him in television. That's my opinion and my two cents worth. Now, Paul, the letter I wrote to you is about a very serious subject that I'm not prepared to cover in a two-minute conversation on this radio show. But we have a deep culture problem in this country, and hopefully we will come up with the political guts to do something about the 2 to 5 year old children that are not getting the start in life they need because they are living on the wrong side of the tracks.
Well said, Hugh. Thank you very, very much. Good to hear from you, and we will talk again soon. John is up next in Louisville. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. Yeah, I want Hugh to do my eulogy and legend to be the master of ceremonies for my wake.
Yeah, by the way, John, I now do, you know, things have been tough, as you know, and I do eulogies on the side, so I'll be more than
good.
Eulogies, bar mitzvahs, confirmations, I'll even do a bris thrown in.
Hey, congratulations to Tennessee. They helped another team make the NCAA finals this weekend,
I'm not sure where they are right now. I mean, they've done is gone down the seed line.
Free fall. And the last 2 weeks have been crazy, Paul. Some of your best callers are crazy callers. I'm sure you've downloaded pretty heavy with your therapist. But the Friday kickoff calls with Tracy blaming the other driver and creating that story, Tracy, the story later, then Evelyn admonishing you for harassing Miller and Alabama. But the coup de grace was Jim, who went scurrilous on you, and then you threw him off the Paul Feinbaum hay train while it was still moving.
Yeah, no, I felt badly about that because, I mean, Jim's always been the caller on the show. But, I was just thinking of throw Mama from the train when I threw Daddy off her with him.
I know. Hey, can you do the caller bractology? Can you put it up?
This isn't CNN here. I mean, we need a little bit of a heads up before a breaking news bug comes on the screen, but we'll find it.
Well, I'd love to see it. And I have to admit, it's not important to me where I place because I've got the Black Hat membership.
Okay, we've got, this is just projections right now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got Legend Jim, I-Man, and Larry are the projected number one seeds.
Well, you got a couple good ones there. And again, this is, to me, it's not important. I've got that Black Hat membership. It's like an Amex gold card. It gets me free drinks, tickets to the best Las Vegas shows, VIP seating at major sports events, Legends betting newsletter, and, of course, it moves me up on the caller line. But if I won the mug, I mean, to be honest, Paul, not to hurt your feelings, I'd put it on eBay along with the other mugs and bobbleheads you have and unsold books. But
that's the operative word right there.
I do enjoy seeing people move around on that list. It's kind of fun.
Thank you very, very much. Pat is up next in Georgia.
Hey, Paul, thanks. I want to talk about Kirby Smart and whether there is or is not a culture issue at Georgia. This is not a criticism. I'm looking for an answer and what can be done so that we don't go through what we've been through in the last month or two. There's no question in my mind, nothing happens there that is not okay with Kirby Smart. That's just his personality. But if there were a culture with racing or with guns or with DUIs or anything else, other than putting the fear of God in the players, what really can he do? Not play somebody? In your opinion, I mean, what can any head coach really do?
I really don't think there is what I would call a serious culture issue there. I think they've had a couple of issues that have come up that are understandable. It happens on many college campuses. I think the biggest disappointment that I have, and disappointment is a pretty inartful word to use, is that when Jalen Carter was pulled over during the fall, I wish the officer would have given him a ticket instead of saying to him, hey, tell your buddies to slow down, because a ticket would have perhaps woken him up. and a warning didn't do anything. And now all this is out in the open. I'm sure that is really setting the new bar that hopefully you have what you need on any college football team is upper level leadership, where these guys start taking over, the older players, the upperclassmen take over and legislate from within, as opposed to Kirby Smart giving a fire and brimstone speech that simply would amount to very little. We head to the break. We have guests waiting here. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. The legendary Tubby Smith joins us in a moment.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
You're listening to the Paul Finebaum Show podcast.
And the saga continues tonight on Southern Hoops, and someone that will be featured is our next guest, Tubby Smith, who coached in the SEC at both Georgia and at the University of Kentucky, winning the national championship there as the coach in 1978. Coach, it's great to say hello to you again. It's been too long. How are you? And thanks for making time for us.
Well, thanks for having me, Paul. You've always been good to me, and I appreciate it. And you do a fantastic job.
Well, thank you for saying that. And it's such a pleasure to have you on. And I know as you were interviewed for this, and I don't know how much you've been able to see, I'm sure a lot of memories come rushing back to. I mean, you had many stops along the way, but what stood out as you were trying to reflect back many, many years ago?
Well, just the players, you know, we were just backing, and they honored that the 96, 97, 98 teams a couple of weeks ago in Lexington when they played Tennessee. And so it was to see some of the players, and that's what you remember most is the relationships that you had with those young men, and to see them now and see how they've grown, that they've become fathers and parents and husbands and doing well. So that's what I remember most.
Coach, I know you've had some great moments along the way. I remember a number of them at Tulsa and even at Georgia in the tournament, obviously at Kentucky and many times since then. But when you win the title, it's something that never goes away. You talked about being honored with your class a few days ago, but is there any way to encapsulate what that moment meant and what it continues to mean to you?
Well, it, obviously, talking with you and doing a documentary, this Southern Roots Hoops is something that we're a part of. We wouldn't be a part of this if we hadn't won a national championship and I hadn't been the coach of Kentucky. So it's meant the world to me. Obviously, this little round basketball has meant so much to me and my family. I'm grateful to Dr. Wethington, who was the president at the time at Kentucky, and C.M. Newton, who we knew extremely well, took a chance and hired me to lead that great program. So it was a historical moment that at the time you're just grateful and just trying to win. You're just trying to because I took over for a legendary coach in Rick Pitino, who had just won a national championship. So it was a little scary at the time, but it was challenging, but we got through it.
I remember seeing you one night. CM had an event, I believe it was in Tuscaloosa, and he whispered in my ear that you don't realize what Coach Smith went through because I mean, at Kentucky, it's always the same, but they won in 96, should have won the year before probably, and 97 lost in overtime. And then you walk in there, and I mean, even a national championship that was expected, was it not? I mean, that had to be a difficult transition.
Well, I was blessed and I was fortunate enough to have some very talented players returning, like Alan Edwards and Jeff Shepard, Scott Padgett. They had been a part of the championship run under Rick Pitino. So, and coming from Georgia, where I actually had tried to recruit some of those players, had competed against them the previous couple of years. So, and we played a style that was similar, up-tempo, pressing, shooting the threes. But so it wasn't as big a transition because of Coach Newton and the confidence that he had in me. That made all the difference in the world. Plus a great staff. When you put together a great staff like George Felton, Sean Finney, Mike Sutton, guys that I knew, Dave Hobbs, who had been on the staff before,
sure.
who lives there in Birmingham now. So we had a great staff as well.
Coach, you've been at a number of places. I think at Memphis as well as Kentucky. Places that that really. It isn't Georgia. You go in there and they want to win, and they have won. They've been to a Final Four, come close to it. But these are different type of places. As a coach, you know what you're getting, though. But it still has to be wearing on you, does it not?
Well, the challenge. No one puts more pressure on themselves than the coach, the head coach. Just so your fans and everyone understand that, you're the one that's going to have to address the media. You're the one that's going to be the first one fired. You're the one that's going to have to deal with anything that happens. Everything is attributable to you. Whatever success or non-success you have is going to be placed on the head coach's shoulder. So from the first day I started coaching in 1973 as a high school coach, you accept that role. You accept that responsibility. It's more intense at a Memphis or a Kentucky or even at a Georgia. But to the greater the challenge, the greater the reward. And so to much is given, much is required. So you're given a great opportunity. So it's important that those expectations that you have for your program and that the program and the fans and administration, you just got to make sure that they understand what it's going to take and hope they understand that what it takes for you to reach those dreams and those goals.
Coach, I know that this time of the year we always get into philosophical questions about the game.
Yeah.
And I know C.M. Newton always used to talk about, the semesters and starting it later. And, I mean, there's so many different aspects. But it does seem like, as somebody that spent a lot of time going to football games in the SEC, that the college basketball season in most places, not in Kentucky, not in Memphis, not in other places, but in most places, it is not really noticed until late in December, maybe even as early as January when the SEC season starts. Is there anything that we can do, or are we just stuck with the system that we have?
Well, because it's a two-semester sport, I think that's where you have the challenge because, you have in the semester break, and that's a big time. Most students like here at High Point, they're gone for like 2 or 3 weeks. And so you don't have that same level of interest by your student body and by the media during that period. And that's the time that the bowl games are going on in December and January. And Coach Newton, you're right. He was always pushing for it to be a single semester sport because he thought that would be, number one, he was thinking about student athletes. Number two, he was thinking about not competing, with football, especially in the SEC at the time. I think, and the other things he was always concerned about is just the continuity of the game. And for instance, I think men's basketball should probably go to quarters. It's we've kind of gravitated towards the FIBA rules, international rules, and the professional rules. With the 30-second shot clock, the three-point line being pushed back, all those things that are happening, And the way the game's called today, it's just different. And so you're right. Philosophically, there are a lot of things that I think that we have to continue to look at to improve basketball. But people love this. Let's face it. It's probably the most economical game being played in college sports today. When you think about it, it's a lot of money being made from the NCAA basketball Final Four and four games, and it's just in the realignment that's taking place. It's all geared towards making sure these teams are, and players are, and everyone involved that are being, that they're getting piece of the pie.
I wanted to ask you about something that I get asked a lot about, and there's some things I know a little bit about. I think I officiated sorority girls basketball in high school, so that's my experience here. And I'll admit,
I'd better be a sorority. Yeah,
Coach Smith, I didn't know what I was doing. I just called an occasional travel foul just to make myself look honest. I bring this up because I sit there like everyone watching and listening right now and goes crazy with the officiating in basketball. Is it really as bad as it looks, or as somebody who's been on the other side of it, how does it appear to you?
Well, I got to tell my players, you're never as good as you think you are. You're never as bad as you think you are. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. Same way to officiating. They've got a tough job. And the game, when they added three officials, I think it did some good. But now with the replay, you imagine the number of calls that were wrong or that they got right. But they do get a lot right. I have utmost respect for officials, and I always say that's why I didn't get many technicals, if I got any at all, when I was at Kentucky. And that's one of the things that really used to irk some people. Coach, you got to get on those officials. You got to stay on them about this. But, I officiated myself in college and when I was a high school coach just to make a few bucks on the side. So it's – and even in practice, one coach will call one thing and will call a block. The other coach will call a charge. So it's just a lot of gray area in sports. One of the things we're going to have to, I think, clean up is, the block charge. Or when was the shot taken? In the NBA, once you start your move to the basket, but in college it's different. I think they're trying to clean and make it as clean as they can do it. But when you have human error looking at it, it's just – and the game, again, has changed. It's not as physical as it used to be. Because it's just not, and that's why the scores are going up, I would think, and 3-point shooting has made all the difference in the world. That's what people do. There's no real post play per se in college sports, because that's just the way it has gravitated. But it's a tough job, and I got to compliment the officials for what they do.
You ruined my day being nice to the officials. Coach, before you go, you mentioned being in Lexington a few weeks ago. And, we just had a caller, a smart basketball guy, UK fan, who said, I want to apologize for my eulogy 3 weeks ago on John Calipari. What is going on with that program from what you've seen up close and from a distance?
Well, you have people understand that they're going to have ebbs and flows, ups and downs. Players have issues that you have to deal with. Just like here at High Point, my son Gigi lost the job here. He had people, one player's grandmother passed to raise him. The mother has breast cancer. Another kid breaks his hand. And John went through some of that. The kid, Frederick, was down with a back problem. He had another kid that's hurt. Wheeler was out. I was up there, and I kind of spoke to the team, and I was on his radio show. I said, be patient, people. I had the same issue. I said, they wanted to run me out of town my first year there, but we went on to win a national championship. But look what John's done. He's won five out of his last six games. He's got him better on the right track. I don't think it's anything wrong. I just think you can see there's not a dominant team in the sport anymore. You're gonna lose some games, and you're gonna get beat. Look at all the buzzer beaters that are happening with the 3-point shot. Anything can happen.
Coach Chubby Smith, what a pleasure it's been for all of us to get a chance to listen to you. Be well, Coach, and hope to talk soon.
Thank you, Paul. I love listening to you, man. You do a great job.
What a pleasure. What a great conversation that was with Tubby Smith. You'll see him later tonight on Southern Hoops. And we will take a short break. We're back after this.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Who would win the awards, especially Brandon Miller? Buzz Williams and Jerry Stackhouse are co-coach of the year. There's a lot of conversation about that. Miller has won player and freshman of the year. That was not really a big surprise, although some were wondering if it would happen. Kobe Brown, the SEC scholar athlete of the year. Liam Robbins was named defensive player of the year. Quinterly and Antonio Reeves were named the co-SEC sixth man of the year. Of course, the tournament begins on Wednesday in Nashville. And let's get back to the calls here and check in with Richard in Mississippi. Hello, Richard. Richard, good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing?
We are great.
Good, good. I just want to make a comment on the biggest crybaby, one of the richest people in the state of Alabama, and all he wants to do is cry. Pitiful, pitiful, pitiful Nick Saban. I wish he had the same dignity as great Paul Bryan did, instead of being such a whining crybaby. Whining, whining, whining. What does he want to do? Play the girls' schools? Thank you.
Pork chop is up next in Mississippi. Hello, Pork Chop.
Mr. Feinbaum, how you doing?
We are doing really well. Thank you.
I've been trying to call in for a long time. I had to get my great-granddaughter to dial it, because anytime you add letters and numbers to a phone number, I have called Walmart, Kmart, and Dollar General. But
oh my
I finally
goodness.
Got it right.
Well, I'm glad you got in. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. But I heard a while back people talking about Coach Bryant and all, what they meant to him. But he had came to our school at the University of Southern Mississippi, and he got there because somebody was retiring. Now, he come around the building and saw one of the coaches. And when he brought the coach in there with him in the room where we was keep our lawnmowers and stuff, and we gazed at him smoke a cigarette, which we ain't supposed to, but the coach came in there, and Bear Bryant followed him in, and he's sitting there asking us to bum a cigarette. Now, I don't know back in your day what age you are, but my age, if you wanted a cigarette from a white guy, you had to get it out from the other side of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
Vice versa on the other side. But he walked in there, and he sat down on a stool, and the coach was talking to this little wormy guy with a bow tie. And he got one of the cigarettes out. And he took a draw on that, and he went to a coughing. And when he did, he said, looked at the guy that gave him that cigarette. He said, "Damn, you need to play football for me." He said, "Coach, I don't know nothing about football." He said, "Hell, it don't matter. Anybody can smoke one of these damn things. It's got to be tough." But he was so nice to us. Every one of us in there, and he treated us like we were somebody for about 30 years.
You know, Pork Chop, that's what I think differentiated Coach Bryant from literally everybody else. He grew up a poor boy in Fordyce, Arkansas, and he never lost that. I wish more would be like him today. Sadly, that is not true. Matt is
hey,
up
bro,
next.
How you doing? You know, I enjoy seeing those Alabama tears, Paul, with Buzzman whooping the crap out of Alabama. What did you see in that game, Paul? Now we're talking about small stuff.
Well, certainly a great finish for Buzz.
Oh, yeah. You know, spring games are coming up this year, Paul, with A&M. I want to see A&M better stretch the ball, be more efficient on offense. I want your thoughts on that. And I might want to ask you a question. A&M was number two in that game. Alabama was number one. What does that make us in basketball?
Well, I think, Matt, remember last year Buzz went to the SEC tournament and made a run and nearly got in the big dance. He's well established right now, and I think they have a really good chance to make some noise. They won't have a great seed. I think that's going to be the dangerous part. But, I mean, they'll be in a dangerous first-round match. We're up against a break. We have three more hours to go. We hope you'll stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.